The following message has been brought to you by Fairway Market. What's the buzz about honey? Well, those busy little bees are up to something, and it is delicious. The Fairway label honey is superb. Fairway only hires worker bees that are the best at what they do. This makes for a great tasting, high quality honey at an amazing value with the Fairway stamp of approval. And on top of being delicious, honey is a great substitute for other sweeteners and can even benefit your health. This includes better energy, respiratory improvements, and balanced blood sugar levels. It's a no-brainer. Get your Fairway honey today.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah.
That cat is high. Look that look in his eye. Oh, man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite. That cat is high. Look that look in his eye.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we have one of my favorite people in the industry. Met this fellow a few years back, and I'm glad to have kept meeting him over and over again. We have Scott Cron from the D.H. Cron Gin Company, or the American Gin Company, featuring D.H. Cron Gin and Avril Damson Gin. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thanks, Damon.
So let's talk a little bit about the American Gin Company. This was a project of between you and a friend from Cornell.
Correct.
Cool. How did this all come about?
Well, as a lot of great business ideas come from, it was over a drink, actually.
Absolutely.
And conceptualized on a cocktail napkin. Mm-hmm. And if you can believe it, there was an upscale cocktail place at in College Town. Where I went, and it was just really through my business partner and I drinking gin, and the other part of it was observing the bar, you know, and what we observed was at the time, and this was in the early 2000s, there was gins that I loved. You know, you have the old traditional London dry style, and really what we realized is that, you know, the gin market was really in decline. None of our friends were drinking gin, and heck, you know, maybe part of that reason was because there wasn't really a whole lot new in the market to you know, grasp the attention of the younger crowd.
Yeah, not to date you or anything.
Yeah.
Or expose your age, but what year was this? Give us
2003.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've got a lot of people drinking vodka.
Correct.
Lots of, pretty much, that's when, you know, a lot of the flavored vodkas started booming, and you guys were drinking gin, which is, did you ever get any shit for being the two old men at the bar?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, with full disclosure, I am Canadian, even though I own the American Gin Company. The other half is American, but you know, we drink a little earlier in Canada, and it's just been a spirit that I've always liked. And I, to be honest with you, I didn't know much about it or how it was produced up until that point, where we actually started to write down ideas on a napkin. But I really love the taste of it.
Cool. So you guys, you were drinking your gin and tonics, hanging out, having these college days dreams of owning a gin company.
Yeah.
Flash forward to the time you started actually working on this. What was it, 2004? You basically started the actual company. Mm-hmm. And were producing.
Yeah, between the time the idea came up and the time we actually formed the company, it was, I guess, the time when we were sitting at the bar was a laugh, you know, we're one day going to own a gin company. And we did some more research, and really what we decided was, you know, one, the gin category had been had negative sales growth for 12 straight years. Hmm. The category was really, really in decline, I guess there's no better time to get into the category when it's at the bottom.
It's a
we were
buyer's
fortunate.
Market.
we were fortunate that we made a bet that one gin was going to come back. Mm-hmm. It's one of the largest, the highest consumed spirits in the United States.
Now,
even at the time, it was, even though it was declining.
Oh,
and the second part of it is we looked at the beer market, and saw, well, you know, people are really getting excited for small production beers and micro brews. So, heck, who knows? Maybe this trend for micro distilling in the United States would come to life. And really, we're lucky that a lot of this has come true. People are definitely starting to take an interest in small production spirits. Mm-hmm. We owe a lot to bartenders like yourself, because you're the ones that are right there on the floor pushing gin, you know. So without you guys, the category definitely wouldn't be where it is now.
Awesome, thank you. You know, let's talk about the actual flavor profile of this gin for a little while. Mm-hmm. Now, you started out, if you read the Bartender's Gin Compendium by Gaz Regan, I still like to call him Gary, but
me too.
if you don't mind me referencing real quick, but it says here that it's categorized in the style of a London Dry / American Dry, mm-hmm. and not like a New American.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you? But well, basically for our listeners, can you kind of explain what that means? I mean, like London Dry obviously is like juniper, botanical heavy,
mm-hmm.
A little bit more bite. But American, like a lot of people think of American gins as across the board as like a softer, lighter botanical, not so juniper heavy, maybe a little bit more lavender, mm-hmm. and coriander. But yours kind of falls somewhere between the two. It kind of like brings people that don't necessarily want that huge piney bite.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys have a lot of citrus in your gin,
yep.
which to me makes it perfect for a gin and tonic. But can you kind of explain like what's going on with like American style gin as far as the style goes?
Sure. I mean, I guess for the novice drinker, for those that don't understand the production process for gin, I always think it's important to talk about the fact that gin is essentially a flavored vodka, to put it simply.
It's we always joke about it being the very first, like the original flavored vodka.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is, I mean, you start off with a neutral spirit. That's the blank canvas. As you were saying, the London Dry style tends to be real sharp, really heavy with juniper and extremely angular. And another point is it's high strength. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's up between 94 and 95 proof. So those are the gins that I grew up drinking grew up drinking since I was of age. But I love those.
Maybe a little bit before.
Yeah. And I love those gins, and I continue to drink them.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that we understood was, or the one thing that we thought is, you know, heck, I like that flavor. I like that high juniper gin and the high strength gin, but we understood that that's a polarizing flavor. So what we tried to do is sort of replicate, and this is an old world style as well. I mean, mm-hmm. it's important to note that you know, there's a distinct family tree and
mm-hmm. definitely.
And, well, I shouldn't say distinct. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different styles, and we researched a lot of old world gins that happen to be rounded and oily.
I don't know why we're talking about the way it tastes when we're not tasting it. Let's have a little taste.
I'll add some brevity to this. The overall flavor profile, it has a nice juniper backbone. It's not quite as heavy with the juniper, but overall it's more of a rounded, slightly more delicate flavor profile than a London Dry style, and nice and oily. We use fresh citrus peel, so you get this rounded, oily flavor from the...
You guys use... pretty commonly, people use... gin producers use lemon and lime mm-hmm. peel and orange peel in theirs. And you use grapefruit, right?
Grapefruit.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes a lot of sense, especially if you're going to be mixing, you know, your martinis, your gin and tonics, stuff like that. Also, it works really well in a last word cocktail. let's taste it.
Yeah, the grapefruit, I like the grapefruit because, and
it really stands out in the gin.
Yeah, by the way, it took about a year and a half to come up with a flavor profile when you're working with different herbs and spices, and talk about how we soak all these spices in that neutral spirit before we redistill it. It's amazing at how much, you know, you you know, you soak a spice like, I don't know, or a citrus peel like lemon, you can let it sit in there for a good deal of time, and it's not going to have like an overbearing result on the M flavor profile. But for example, we played around with a botanical cardamom, and that's, we didn't end up using it, but that's a botanical or spice that, I mean, you let that sit in the spirit
really
for an hour, and it starts to really take over. So it is an art. It takes a lot of time to figure out the balance on these gins.
Mm-hmm. You know what's cool about this, and actually it'll segue into one of your other products. You've got this really great grapefruit presence, but also there's like a little bit of ginger in there as well. It's like Thai ginger you use, right?
Yep.
And then you use this gin as the base, am I correct, for another product that's very new to the market, the Avril Damson gin.
Correct. And I owe a lot to you, Damon. You're the one that put that that seed in my mind for that product. But we use a very similar flavor profile for the base of the Avril Damson gin. When a lot of distillers make their gins, what they do is, you know, they soak their spices in the spirit, and then they distill it. When it comes out on the other end, it's a very concentrated version of the final profile. And so what a lot of distillers will do is, once that that distillate comes out of the other end of the still, they're going to dial that down with neutral spirits in order to get it to the intensity that they want. So with this, what we do, we have a very, very beefy, intense gin, and then we're integrating with the juice of Damson plums from Red Jacket Orchards in Geneva, and then lightly sweetening it. So it's historically Damson gin is a product that the English have made, and this is the first Damson gin to be made in the United States, to my knowledge anyway.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. But it's cool because, like, using that mash bill, if you want to, you know, if you want to start using whiskey.
Botanical terms. Profile.
But yeah, the botanical profile. That's what they call it in gin. It's mash bill for whiskey. But using that botanical profile, I mean, like, you've got plum with grapefruit and ginger. I mean, like, that just makes sense to base it with that. You know, it's like, those spices go so well together. Also, the orange and the plum, you know. I actually use this gin, the Damson gin, in a couple of, well, actually, you need to come back by my bar sometime, because I've got quite a few new ones. But there's one that I use with Unterberg Bitters and Cointreau and Puntames, and it just, like, it's all, like, basically, it's like the spices you use to cook duck, but it works really well in a cocktail because of the clove. So this is now entering its second year of production.
Correct. In the thing with the Damson plum is that it historically was used for jams and preserves. It's a very small plum, a little bit bigger than a cherry, and, you know, much too tart, spicy. The skins are very astringent. It's not conducive to be eaten out of hand. So normally people would cook the plums down and add some sugar and make them into jams and preserves. I lost my train of thought there. What did you ask me again there, Damon?
I probably just...
Oh, I know where I was going with this. The demand for these plums had fallen over the years. I mean, just, I guess people really aren't jamming and preserving anymore. So in our first production, we had enough fruit to produce about 100 cases. And the plums harvest August, September every year. And then the products produce once a year shortly after that. And there was a great Damson harvest this past year, so we'll be able to produce a little bit more.
Nice.
In the coming production.
And you said that it was the plums are actually harvested a little bit later in the season, so they are very ripe, so you get a lot more concentrated sugar content and, like, rich flavor. So,
and the skins, the one amazing thing about Damson plums, they're the oldest cultivated plums. I mean, there's evidence that the Crusaders spread them throughout Europe, and then the early American settlers, the French and the English, brought them over to America. But in the early days, the skins of the plums were actually used for the production of dyes.
Right.
And so you get this really beautiful, rich, reddish purple color, like a crimson color. It's
exactly.
Really beautiful.
And it tastes really great, too. You know, a lot of people, they tend to lump these, like, Damson gin in with sloe gin, which is also another, like, very British, you know, style of gin. But what a lot of people don't realize is that this is actually made from a plum, not a sloe berry, and it's like the sloe gins are very sweet. Mm-hmm. And so when you get this Damson gin, it's kind of like a real drinker's, like, infused gin, you know? It's like for, like, bartenders, we really like using it because it's very bright and acidic, and it works really well in cocktails. And then you know, it's almost like when you're recording music, it's like you can always, like, add more bass to it, but you can't take bass out. It's like the same thing with this. It's like you can add sugar to it. If it's not sweet enough, it's like you can add to it in a cocktail, but you can't take it out of sloe gin. Exactly. You know? So it's really, it's an amazing product to work with cocktails. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking a little bit about Avril Damson Gin and D.H. Cron Gin. We're talking with Scott Cron. When we get back, we'll also talk about some other really fun stuff.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, I wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away, and I know, hey, I'll leave a young thing alone, but ain't no sunshine when she.
This is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Every Thursday at 4:30 p.m., tune in to Flash Talks Cash, hosted by Joanne Flash Fleming. Flash Talks Cash is a weekly talk show discussing personal and small business money issues. The show examines current topics from the financial tax world and the ways it impacts your wallet. The focus is to help people and small businesses find ways to make money, save money, spend money, and know what to do with your money when you get it. Again, that's every Thursday at 4:30 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
And we're back at the Speakeasy with good friend, gin producer, Scott Cron from the American Gin Company.
Thank you, sir.
Although he is from Canada, as he so eloquently pointed out at the foot of the show. Hey, so we've been talking about gin. We've been talking about your D.H. Cron gin. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about Avril Damson gin, which is also one of your products. Really fascinating stuff. These products are available in United States or available in UK, and they're constantly, like, being spread around. And with a little help from a company that you work for as well, you represent for
House Alpens.
House Alpens.
Correct.
Which is a company that was started by Eric Seed a little while back. Really found a home in very, like, serendipitous timing, like, with the cocktail movement and, with the renaissance of the cocktails. And that style of bartending in general. I mean, they're some of the first products I saw from them were, you know, like the Creme de Violette and the Allspice Dram, stuff like that, that, you know, no one could actually make a correct aviation, you know, as per, like, Hugo Enslin's 1916 recipe without it, you know, and it was off the market forever. Also, you know, there was, like, you know, Ray and Nephew, I believe, was making a pimento dram, an allspice dram for a little while, but it was really hard to get. And now we have allspice dram, and it's not just for tiki drinks. I mean, you can use it in all kinds of classic drinks. And they're the ones, House Alpens is the one that's helping out with the production of Avril, right?
Yeah, and mostly the distribution,
right,
of it.
That's what I mean. So this company is doing all kinds of cool stuff. You get to, you, I would like to have your job with this company. Yeah, get to talk about really cool, geeky, like rare bitters and liqueurs. Mm-hmm. And you brought some of them with you today. One of them, to start this off, is the Heyman's Old Tom Gin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Old Tom Gin is, I mean, it's definitely considered like one of the like original styles of gin, but it's not something a lot of people know about, you know, still. Can you let our listeners know a little bit more about Old Tom Gin?
And this is a really cool product. You know, number one, it comes from the Heyman's family, which is one of the oldest, or I think the oldest gin producer in London. And this is the style. I think it went out of production in about 1960, but this is the style. The Old Tom style is really, and it's an unfortunate period in England's history, but this is the type of gin that fueled the gin craze.
Oh, yeah.
in the United Kingdom in the 18th century. And really what it is it's an very heavily aromatized and lightly sweetened gin. So it's you know, not in the fashion of a London Dry where that's, you know, very angular and dry. This is extremely rounded. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's the original gin in the Tom Collins,
right?
And the Martinez. Yep. You know, when you started Martinez to see a lot of mm-hmm. these,
two of my favorite drinks.
Well, you can help me out with this. The cocktail started to be present in the United States in what, the late 19th century, correct?
The actual like term cocktail or the Martinez or
the cocktails, to my understanding, became popular in the United States late 19th century.
It was like mid to late. I mean,
okay,
you know, we didn't see the term cocktail in mm-hmm. print until 1806, but who knows how long they were being produced. Mm-hmm. But on that note, I kind of make the joke sometimes about Heyman's Old Tom Gin or Old Tom Gin, especially like aged ones, like Ransom that's produced in the Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. I always make the jokes like, dude, put it on rocks and put a twist on it and it's a gin old fashioned because of what you, like just what you were saying before, it's like, it's a little bit more aromatized mm-hmm. and it's sweetened
mm-hmm.
and the true, like the old fashioned cocktail, I mean, or just cocktail in general is like spirit, sugar, water and bitters.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of what this is. It's a prepackaged cocktail.
Well, that's one way of putting it. I mean,
I've heard it both ways.
it's a pretty cool story because the Heyman's family comes from a long standing history of gin production. Christopher Heyman, who is the master distiller, is the great 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 grandson of James Burrow, who invented Beefeater gin.
Oh wow!
And
I didn't know that. That's mm-hmm. that's cool.
So it's a really cool gin, you know. It's one that's a very distinct style and really useful in the market right now with all these classic cocktails, you know, surging and becoming popular.
As are a lot of the, I mean, like pretty much, I mean, all the products that are coming from House Alpens, you know, like Jesus, the even just like Dolan Vermouth, I mean,
yep.
which apparently was the original producer of vermouth too, from mm-hmm. what I've heard.
Well, Eric Seed's the type of guy who doesn't like to bring himself into it, and I'll keep it short, but he has been coined the Indiana Jones of the spirits world. You know, he's really gone and done a lot of research and looked into a lot of these cool products that, you know, went out of production, and he's helped to resurrect a lot of these products and help people in turn resurrect a lot of these classic drinks the right way, which is pretty cool.
And he spends most of his time in Minnesota, where there's no cocktail
oh, yeah.
scene at all.
Don't you know?
Cool, man. Let's.
You want to taste a few things?
Yeah, let's taste some stuff. So the Heyman's Old Tom Gin works really well. Obviously, I mean, it's the original gin base for the Martinez, which is the precursor to the Martini. That's going to be the Martinez will be Old Tom Gin, Italian Vermouth. Maraschino liqueur, bitters, and it's debatable which twist is appropriate. I like lemon twist.
I want to ask you this, Damon. What proportions are you using for the Martinez?
The Martinez? I do it 2-1 on heavy on the vermouth side. Yeah. Like the original.
I knew there was
way.
Something I liked about you because that's the way I do it.
Yeah. And so originally, and like this might perplex a lot of martini drinkers, but the original Martinez was two parts vermouth to one part Old Tom gin and a little bit of maraschino and bitters. And then after a while, it actually switched over to two parts gin to one part vermouth. Mm. And then that's when it started morphing into what we know as a martini nowadays. Obviously, yeah. It was switched out. The gin switched out. The Italian vermouth went to French vermouth, white vermouth. And there you go. You can just see where it goes from there.
Well, that's great because I thought it was just I was getting old and couldn't handle my alcohol anymore. That's why I was switching the portions or something.
10 years ago, I would have done the two parts gin to one part vermouth. But now that we have so many great vermouths on the market, it's... Mm-hmm. I mean, they should be showcased. In fact, you brought one with you, right? The Cookie Torino.
Yeah, we should taste this.
We should. We could almost... for our listeners, we have so many bottles on the table right now. We could actually open a bar in here. We could probably make a Martinez. Looking around right now.
Thank you, Scott.
So, the Cookie Torino vermouth just hit the market.
Yeah, this just hit the market. This is the Cookie Vermouth de Torino. The first product in the market was the Cookie Americano, which is a traditional white Quinquina from Asti.
Mm-hmm. Similar to Lillet Blanc.
Correct, with a little bit more traditional in the sense that it...
a bit more bitter.
A little bit more bitter. Now, the Vermouth de Torino is... there's really two protected geographical indications in the world of vermouth. There's vermouth de Chambéry, which is the Dolan. Dolan vermouth is the only producer with that designation or holding that designation. The other geographical indication is the vermouth de Torino, and that's really known to be real rich, heavy red vermouth. So it's got some richness, but
Carpano under that?
Yeah, that would be more of what you call a vermouth a la vanilla. So again, it's got that real richness. It's got a nice spice profile. It ends with what I find a real heavy vanilla profile. Where this the Cookie Vermouth de Torino, it ends with a more in-depth spice profile with local bitter spices from the area.
It's really beautiful. It's really beautiful stuff. So just in the profile and in the catalog of House Alpins, I mean, you've basically open up so many avenues, so many doors for bartenders and even for the home mixologist, the cocktail enthusiast, to be able to recreate these classic cocktails down to like the finest point. And it's really amazing, man. I mean, especially, with the Damson gin and with these, like this Torino vermouth. Yep. You've got, your allspice dram. You've got these other vermouths in the catalog as well. These, like, Bonal, Quinquina. It's really exciting, for me to even get to talk about this because I'm a total geek about this. And I know my friends are probably listening, wondering why I keep tripping over my words. But it's because we have 7 bottles on the table. And I'm geeking out.
Well, I think that in the liquor industry, over the past 10 years, the market has become so saturated with products, and on the other end of it, the consumer is becoming more and more savvy and educated with products. So, I think that for every new product in the market, it's smart to really have a reason for being, and that's what we're really careful to make sure that we're bringing products to market that really are adding value to someone,
You're definitely adding a lot of value to it across the board. I mean, to me, it's just good for everyone that, bringing great products like this in makes it good for you because you're doing some great, really cool work. And for me as a bartender and for, us as bartenders, we get to work with really cool, interesting ingredients. Mm-hmm. And then for the customers, they get to share that excitement. And then, at home, you get to do that as well. I mean, hell, even Blanc Vermouth. I mean, no one knew what Blanc Vermouth was forever. And, you know, it's just, it's been a really fascinating, you know, last 3 or 4 years, like, since I've known you and got to know you better and got to, like, hang out and talk about cocktails and be a super geek together and drink Damson gin.
I love my job because I am a traveling salesman, if you will. However, when I walk in and with new products, I show people the products, you know, and if it works for you and it adds value to your program, great. If not, that's not a problem either.
Yeah.
And we'll continue to do our best to bring some interesting products to the table.
Well, you've definitely added a lot of value to the bar world these days, and you've added a great deal of value to this show by coming on.
Oh, well, thanks, Damon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Scott Cron, American Gin Company. Buy some D.H. Cron Gin and Avril Damson Gin next time you see a bottle on the show. Thanks again. Thanks to my producer Jack Inslee. And now we're going to go have another shot. Cheers.
That cat is high. Look at that look in his eye. Man, I wouldn't lie. The cat's higher than a kite. Now when you see him stumbling.
Whole Foods Market celebrates Earth Month with Do Something Real Film Festival, a collection of 6 provocative, character-driven films focused on food, environmental issues, and everyday people with a greater vision. Come see one of the 6 features at City Cinemas Village East from Saturday, April 16th through Thursday, April 21st, every night at 6 p.m. Learn more about the films and special events at www.dosomethingreal.com. That's www.dosomethingreal.com. Sponsored by Whole Foods Market. The following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. The Snacky Tunes compilation has arrived and is available for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. This compilation features live performances from some of the hottest acts around today, including Midnight Magic, Surfer Blood, Oberhofer, and more. Again, you can download this compilation for free on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, and make sure to listen to Snacky Tunes every Monday at 2 p.m. on Heritage Radio Network.